So February the 2nd, birthday of Million Genius, has come and gone. And as usual, up until, well, for the last 4 years...
It's also James Joyce's birthday.
For the last 4 years, we had a Milen night, which is Chie Kajiura, otherwise known as Milen Genius's singing voice, do a tribute concert to Milen. Now, this year came with a difference. In years past, as listeners of the cast will know, she started off with a double Milen night, which was her and Sakurai Tomo. She then went to a more rock theme night for the second annual one, which was her and Fukuyama did a few songs together. The third one was Macross Plus themed, which included a bunch of amazing covers as well. But between the third and fourth ones, Chia announced that this was it. The fourth one was going to be the last Milen night. Why? There were circumstances. That is all we know. That is all we may ever know.
We can speculate.
We can speculate. Someone on high came down. You want to talk about people making live-action fan flicks? Well, this is someone coming down on Chie, and I don't know, maybe an I wasn't dotted or a T wasn't crossed, but...
She said a lot on her blog, though, which apparently later she deleted. She said she deleted this part. And she... This is a phrase that is often used in Japanese, like in this kind of entertainment, which is otona no jijō.
Circumstances.
Yeah, but like adult circumstances, right?
I just think translate because, like that because it sounds like she's not porn.
I know that.
Chie, would you tell me if you're in a Scheisse video?
All right, let's all have a laugh and move on. So, this phrase is often taken to mean the... the companies have had a disagreement or falling out,
right,
or something like that. And I think it's really, it speaks to a lot of the psyche of the Japanese entertainment consumers. Because they know that this is all just for fun, right? So if you're having fun, then you're a kid. But like there are
adult problems.
Yeah. Overseeing things. You know?
Right. That's
and
good
so
point.
this is going beyond us. And so we it's not our business, really.
It's out of our hands.
Exactly, right. That implication, I think, only appears in this Japanese.
And actually, now that you mention it, I do remember that blog post. But there were circumstances, and so she had to put an end to it. So this was going to be the last Milen night. So a lot of people are like, well, what is she going to do for this final one? You know, how can she top? Because she's just gotten better and better. And...
You are setting this up.
What she did was not what anyone was expecting, but in retrospect, the clues were there because she split the event in two. So the first half was Milen Night 4, the final one. The second was called...
Animania 01.
Which was going to be an all-new event.
Bear in mind, Renato's been singing this all day.
It's an all-new event featuring Renato, where Chia is supposed to sing... covers of anime songs that she likes.
Yes.
Like Animania.
So it was going to be a new one. Because normally, until now, she's only done Milen Night for Milen's birthday and her laboratory gigs, which are her birthday.
Oh, right. Although this year she didn't... Well, the Milen Nights are laboratory also.
They kind of mix and match sometimes. Like, yeah. When was the last Chia birthday? It wasn't...
No, it wasn't last year because the crossover live...
Yeah.
Was last
year. In other words, I think we have a fair shot of seeing her twice in any given year.
Right.
Yeah, all things considered. And she split this into two gigs, which is something she normally does for her birthday gigs, not for Milen Nights. So that should have been letting us know that Milen Night might not be as long as we thought it would be.
And the price was cheap.
It was 3,500 yen plus 1,000 yen in drink tickets when you walk in the door. So
I've missed every Milen Night... they've had until this time because the tickets go on sale in like what, October?
They went on sale ridiculously early.
They're always on sale in October, and I always think like, oh, okay, I'll get around to it, and then I never do.
Mm.
And I didn't this time either until like half an hour before the show. Got a message from Adrian saying, "Hey, you busy?" And I was like, "No, why?" Said, we got an extra ticket for Milen Night. Do you want to come? This is like 3 o'clock. And I'm like, oh, sure. When does it start? It's like 3:30. It's like, ooh. Okay. So I rushed over. Luckily, it was very close to my place.
Hmm. I think, yeah, that was the point.
That was the point, yeah.
Now...
Well, the ticket came from John.
Right.
Right.
And he was just split, because I only had a ticket for the Mulan gig, Mulan Night.
Mulan Night was sold out, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I believe so.
Animania was not. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, so, Mulan Night was sold out.
The irony of that.
So yeah. So when he came, when Gwen told me like, well, there's two things going, which one you want to go to? I'm like, I just want to go to Mulan Night.
Which was more of a Mulan afternoon, since it started at 3:30 and ended at like 5.
We didn't put it all together.
Yeah.
So I go, I just need that ticket. So I was only going to go to the first, to Mulan Night, and then go home.
Mm-hmm.
Renato was going to go to try to get a ticket, and he ended up getting two tickets.
Yeah. I didn't have a ticket for either.
Either.
And, and I looked on the website, and they said that they might be able to provide on-the-day tickets. So I went there really early, like in the morning. And I spoke to the guy that was setting stuff up, and I said, so what time are you selling the tickets? And he said, well, I'll come back in a couple of hours, I don't know. And I went up the stairs, and there was a guy with an SMS bag, and he was
that's
saying...
That's a dead giveaway every time.
Yeah, and he was like, oh, I overheard your conversation, and I have two tickets here because my friend couldn't come.
Richard, he didn't have a British accent. Everyone Renato talks to has an accent.
Well, he had a Japanese accent. Would you like me to do that one? No, right? So
no, because I'm sure Bond's listening.
Oh, so there you go. So, he...
That took too long to sing
it. No, it didn't... He said he have two tickets, and so he told them to me, and I said, okay, well, thanks very much. So why are you here so early? And he said, well, I'm hoping to get a set of photos or something.
We'll get to that, yeah.
And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to meet a friend of mine for lunch. I think when you have to replace your contacts or something, contact lenses.
I was running late, is a long short.
And I was getting really bad reception on my phone for some reason, wasn't making calls, wasn't getting any emails, but... Adrian was going to come like in about 10 or 20 minutes at the station, and I said, well, I have to meet my friend and then we're going to have lunch. Do you want to well, he and I are probably going to look for a place to have lunch. Do you want to come with us and have lunch maybe later? I'll get in touch with you. And he was like, oh, okay, yeah, sounds doable. But it looked like I was putting too much pressure on him. I really wanted to just thank him in a way.
Do you want me to let you know why?
Why what?
So there were two things when it came to the photographs, because this was the last event. So Chia had a limited number of mini photo booklets she made, which were sold out way before I got there, because I was actually having to get one. Because she has a professional photographer who used to be the photographer for the Yoko Kano fan club before they disbanded, because their president got pregnant. That's a whole other story. And wonderful photographer. Very adult circumstances.
This is your fault, isn't it?
Yeah. So this photographer, she takes amazing pictures, and she's done pics of every gig, because she met Chia at that Yoko Kano fan club event that Adrian and I went to, where Chia was at.
Yeah.
And she met Chia there. And so she had this small photo booklet, which I didn't get one. But then she had 17, so a printout of all the best pics from each year. So there's 17 pictures, professionally printed out, and autographed by her. But they weren't for sale in any way, shape, or form before the gig. What happened was, after the gig, anyone who had the ticket for the gig could get in line and have a go at a lucky draw. And if you pulled the correct ticket, you had the right to buy one of these photos for 2,500 yen. Now,
again, Chie is nothing if not a businesswoman.
I got in line, and maybe 20 people before me, the last one had gone. So, and they obviously didn't put enough pieces of paper in this lucky draw, because there's one, the girl coming down the stairs got the last one. She's like, I got one, and my husband got one too. And I'm just like, you... But I got an autographed thank you note from Chia for buying a ticket, so that was something. But anyways, back to the concert itself.
So, yeah, we went in. Mulan Night, Mulan Afternoon was sold out. We were kind of at the back, and it ran about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Right.
But there were only 5 songs, and it was all Chia performing to backing tracks, and there were instruments behind her, so I kept waiting for a band.
Pause that. That's me.
Yeah, so
it's a good thing we stuck around, isn't it?
For what?
Animania.
No, she planned this all along. She wanted you to be disappointed, So that you would go back to the cashier and buy the second one.
Right, right, right.
This was all planned.
But at the same time, when I bought that second one, I was like, what am I getting myself into here? I've spent over $100 on this thing so far.
Yeah.
Judge Randall? You're right. I'm not buying any more of these.
So there were only 5 songs, and there were
Karaoke versions, basically.
They were karaoke versions.
As you said, there were instruments behind her, and this is when the circumstances just hit everyone in the face. Why is it her band, who she never plays without, even at the Crossover Live, and not on stage with her? What circumstances could these be? Was it that the tickets had to be priced cheaply and she couldn't afford her own band? Was it she feared repercussions from whoever put the muzzle on her this time? We don't know. We may never know.
Last time it was Gwen.
but the fact of the matter is that she came out
Laboratory,
and she did 2 songs.
Yeah.
Remember what
she did? What she started with, Sweet Fantasy,
right? And then Kimi ni Todoke, right?
After yeah. That.
And then she started talking to the crowd, and she was almost, because I was, you guys were in the back, I was like third row from the front, and she was practically crying. She was holding back the tears.
Yeah, it looked like she was
right. She was really close to breaking down, and that, and the fact she just sung 2 songs without her band, and it was just her on stage, and she was like, "Well, I don't know exactly what's gone down.
Right.
I may never know, but I promised you all at the end of Milan Night 3 there'd be a Milan Night 4." She's like, "And actually, I wasn't supposed to do a Milan Night 4, but I promised you there'd be something." So this was her trying to get around what restrictions she had and not annoy people, the powers that be, too much.
Yeah, and it was all really melancholic, bittersweet kind of thing, because she was like, "Oh yeah, well, we had a good run, didn't we? The first one, we had guests, you know, it was me and Tomo Sakurai." Well, and
as you mentioned this, Renato, this is funny, because the way she said it, see, to me, looking at this as a music fan, each time she got more creative, musically, to the point where she was doing Macross and Plus and Frontier covers in the third one, right? But looking at it as an event, the first one, she had art done by Mikimoto, art done by Tenjin, she had video interviews, she had Sakurai Tomo. Second one, she just had Fukuyama as a guest. Third one, she had no guests. So the way she was recounting the events, it became obvious in retrospect only then that the pressure had been on a lot earlier, because less and less people were cooperating with her. Sakurai Tomo appeared in a video in Milan Night 2. I don't think she's that busy somehow that she couldn't actually come to the event a second time, you know.
Well, it must have taken a long time to record all those lines of dialogue from Macross 30, surely.
Right, and don't forget there's probably the Lemon Angel reunion.
Oh, yes, so that's coming up soon. Yay!
Yes.
But
Lemon Angel is back.
It became obvious that this was something that was had been building up longer than I'd expected.
Yeah.
And she did make one note, and that was that the first Milan Night, having so many people Macross-related involved, was very much like an official event. It could have been easily mistaken for an event. Now, she had all the correct copyrights on her Goobaba stickers. She had the big West marks and everything.
But it sold until the second event.
Didn't they?
Yeah, they weren't at the first event.
Well, and she still sells those.
She was still selling her Laboratory stuff.
Right.
And Milan Night shirts. That was it. And then the second event, they had the Goobaba ones, and that's, I think, Renato bought one. Didn't you buy?
I bought one just at this one.
At this one?
I never bought one before.
Bought one at her birthday gig a year and a half ago.
She sent me one with my ticket.
You win.
Yes.
But, yeah, I suppose my point was
the guy was in a drama with Mizuki Alisa.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I still lose.
It seems that she had gotten all the correct approvals, but obviously the initial Milan Night was easily mistakable for an official event. She was using the Milan name, and something happened, and it all came crashing down, which is why she started up Animania to replace it. So,
she was talking for like 10 or 15 minutes and bumming everyone out, at least me.
Yeah.
Like, this was so great. And then she said, "Well, we made lots of videos. We shot some of them at my house. I did interviews, and we also shot promotion videos for a couple of songs. So, we're going to play those for you now."
Well, yeah, she'd played them in the past, of course.
Yeah.
Right.
They were from Millennium Night 1 and 2.
Again.
Right.
But the thing is, she did say that these can never be released. She said she had multiple copies of them on DVD at home, and but that she can never give them to anyone.
Yeah.
So this was people's last chance to ever see these. So, yes.
So
in retrospect, Richard, you did get caught up in spectacular
fashion. These DVDs can never see the light of day.
Right.
Right. Well, yeah. Top secret. Jesus.
Elaine Knight, the untold story.
Yes.
Exactly.
And her
directed by Colin Mathew.
Dog was barking during the second video.
You got to see Tengen do the interview.
Yeah.
Which was really good. And wasn't Chia's hair better back in Millennium Night 1?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And you got to see the infamous Sakurai Tomo comments about
yes.
she'd never wear anything like
yes.
that.
Yeah,
and
I know. I was laughing at that point.
And I ended up talking about, I watched this when I was a kid, Macross 7, and Sakurai Tomo slowly edging away from
yeah.
the youngster. So
now those videos,
mm-hmm.
promo videos, were good for the
yeah,
songs.
Yeah,
I like those.
But those were actually longer than the original ones.
So yeah, they played basically music videos of Chie and Tomo Sakurai just kind of mining to studio versions
yeah.
of the songs, and it was like half of it was in a recording studio. And then half of it was with
in a park.
The band in a park.
Yeah, like well, they were in a park or
yeah.
Yeah.
Yogi Park.
They were intercut with each other.
Yeah, yeah,
it
yeah.
It was only a music video style.
I'll be
yeah.
honest, it worked well for the first song, but the fact they did it for two, I was kind of getting a little sick of it. I was like, keep
yeah.
it thematically same for one song and then
mm-hmm.
different.
I was okay with that.
But
they didn't
fun.
Show those before.
Yeah, I didn't remember them.
Yeah, those weren't shown before, so
I guess she was planning to release a DVD, as she
yeah.
said.
So
and
just
then
the interviews were shown.
Mm-hmm.
For the Tengen interview wasn't shown at all at the first one.
Really?
Okay. No. I think because of the time constriction. It was
probably
a short gig. The gig you went to was longer, and then they showed the...
So this was Tengen interviewing Chie and Tomo Sakurai.
The second one that Renato went to, that was they did show a video of her talking with Iendo, but it was a lot shorter.
Okay.
And this time there was like two videos.
Right.
Yeah.
Like the one we saw and then a second one.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was a good way to... Oh, and she added to the videos the Mikimoto and Tengen art, whereas originally they just played... They were just projected on the screen at the event with no music or anything, whereas she worked those into the video this time. They
right.
played there at the end. She panned the camera down.
It was the same way.
But
with
it
that,
wasn't...
With that, like, ambient... Like,
but that Milan... character art was the last thing at the concert, at the first Milan night. It was the last thing they showed, because the curtains closed... Then they showed that. It wasn't part of the video.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, because she edited it all together.
Yeah, she edited it all together, yeah.
But yeah, so you didn't even go to the first Melee night, but that's what we saw at the first Melee night.
Right.
I mean, now granted, that Tengen art has since been reprinted in
Second
Sortie. But, so then, so we got all these videos.
New printings, I'll have to rip that page out.
They went for like 40 minutes, and then, do you remember what we got at the end, song-wise?
My friends ended it.
Right. So it was really short.
Wait, her iPad broke halfway through. She was going to do more songs, I'm sure.
Right. Oh, that's right, yeah. Cause
she was iPad. Does anyone know how to use an iPad? It won't turn on. And so she was just rambling for a while. So who's here? Who's been to all the Millennium Nights? Yeah?
Yeah,
you? Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
that's right. So she was going to do more than five songs, but
yeah, she does rely on that iPad an awful lot in the last few gigs.
But she gave a shout out to the Gaijin Butai.
She
yes.
did.
Did she?
Yeah.
Yeah, on video, nonetheless, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, she mentioned us.
Yeah.
Not by name.
She said, like, we have a lot of these foreign fans who all know the lyrics to the songs.
Oh wait, yes, I do remember that, because when she said that, Richard, turn around and look at me. I got something like putting his two thumbs up.
He's doing
something.
A Fonzie.
It's a cheesy.
Hey.
Now, granted, they're only talking about these guys because I hadn't gone to a Chia gig until Melee Night.
Right.
And that was recorded for the first Melee Night. So
bear in mind that, like back in my rock days, I learned early on that if you dance or, like, mouth along to... songs of an artist you like, you know, they can see the audience, and most musicians really like that.
Really?
Much more than if people are just standing around looking like zombies. So I always do my best to rock out if I'm enjoying a show, because, again, they like that, and they will remember you.
So we had iPad breakage, yeah, which was a shame. But either way, the whole thing was fairly short affair. And I was, like I said, third row from the front, so we had seats. And I was like, I came up to you guys once that closed out. I was like, what the hell was that?
No, you didn't say that. That's what Richard said. You said, okay, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. There is some conspiracy going on here.
You came up from the bottom level, like from the floor. Came up and like, that's it, I am getting to the bottom of this. Somebody put a stop to it.
That is exactly what you said.
God damn it, give me more beer. So we
Richard
ran out.
Was really disappointed. You were angry.
Yeah.
I was disappointed because it was like, I rushed out of my house to like get here on time. I got here on time. I got the ticket. I was like, okay, finally lane night. Finally, I'm here. And
so we went out, and what was it that convinced you to, I'm talking Adrian and Richard, to get tickets for...
Oh, well, I was saying that earlier. I didn't have a ticket, because I only wanted to go to Midnight Night, and John was there, and John is the guy that's always first in line, front row.
Not this time he wasn't.
Time he was further number than any of our tickets.
Yeah.
Oh, was it?
But,
and just to give context, there were probably, 240, 250 people?
Yeah, it was definitely a sold-out venue. The venue was nice.
Yeah, the venue was cool.
So, we always talk to John and joke around, and I was like, I'm not going to go to the second one. He's like, you're not going? I'm like, here. He's like, here. Here's an extra ticket. I have bought two sets of tickets. I'm like, oh, cool.
Keep in mind, this is a guy who bought tickets sight unseen for every single showing of the Music Culture.
That's true.
At full price.
So he gave me a ticket, and but I didn't need... This was going before going into the first show, and I saw that he had... If he gave me that ticket, he still had the extra first ticket. And I just figured, I might be able to get your other ticket sold. At least you get some money back, and that's when I called you. And it worked out. Mm. So I got a ticket to go, which is awesome. And then
it always works out.
Yeah.
Well, for you got a ticket to ride.
Well, for most of us, it always works out. So, but then Richard got there, and he didn't have a ticket, and then you decided to buy a ticket after the first showing.
Right.
What made you want to buy?
Yeah, what made you want to do that? Spend more money.
Especially at 5,500 yen.
Okay, first thing was that I didn't realize that the second concert was more expensive until I bought the ticket.
I didn't realize it until you told me, and I was like, thank God I got a free ticket.
Yeah, so I thought, okay, Mulan Night 4 sucked. Animania might be interesting. I like Chie. I'll spend 3,500 yen for that. And yeah, so again, this was Animania. This is not a Macross event. It has nothing to do with Macross. This was just Chie singing anime songs that she liked. No. And I was like, going into it, I was like, what is she going to do? Is it going to be like Touch or, you know, like, is she going to pull out some Gundam songs, or what are we going to hear here?
Right. I would have thought it had been, like, some kind of, like, Team Revolution or something like that.
Right.
Jam Project?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something
fast?
90s.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing is we got in there, and it was all standing now, no longer sitting down, and we get in there, and...
But not sold out.
Not sold out, but look, shall I give away the punchline? Before we get into this, because I think the minute we get into the track list.
Yeah.
So the punchline is basically that Animania is Milan Knight rebranded. She can't call it Milan Knight. She has to throw in at least one song that's not a Milan song. In this
and
case,
it was only one song.
No. It wasn't one song that wasn't a Milan song. It was one song that wasn't
a Macross song. Well, yeah. And
no, just
she came on stage from the outset much happier with a working iPad and with her band.
Yeah.
And
not with an iPad, with an iPhone. They used iPhones for this one.
But she has her iPad normally on the stand.
Oh, okay.
Maybe she's got the lyrics or something on there.
Yeah, she's got everything on there. And so she kicked into... Look, Richard, basically, the set list was a variant on Milan Knight 3 with some additions and subtractions. But since we talked to death about Milan Knight 3 last time, I'll let you go with the set list here.
Set list.
And what
voices...
What do you think of voices? Because she...
Amazing.
Okay. That sums it up. Because it was great last time. I actually thought she refined it more this time around.
I think it's not that she refined it. I think her band has gotten a lot better.
Okay.
Huh.
That's because you, if you went to the first one and the second one, they're okay. It just felt like a garage band.
Mm-hmm.
And they've practiced a lot, and especially at Crossover, they're really good.
Is it the same band, though?
Same band. Because they also did the... They also played on stage at the Shibuya gig we went to.
Right.
The Firebomber Night.
Okay.
So they had a lot of like stage practice, and I think that's what really did it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Voices, Idle Talk.
Which was a great...
Idle Talk was awesome.
Yes.
Really, really, really good.
So, Renato's praising something here. Keep talking.
Yeah.
Sweet. Okay.
No, that's okay.
Sweet Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Koi no Maho.
Plastic. Yeah, which one was the one with Theremin?
Theremin?
No, I'm getting to that. Right. Plastics, The Borderline, where they brought out the Theremin.
Now, they had that last time as well, but the guy using it had gotten a lot better and trickier at how he was using his hand on it. That was really, really cool.
If you don't know what a Theremin is, it's that thing that's in 50s sci-fi movies and also Good Vibrations.
And if you've seen the episode where Sheldon uses the Theremin to do the Star Trek theme in Big Bang Theory, you know what a theremin is.
Or if you saw the John Spencer Blues Explosion play at the
seen a theremin before, then you know what a theremin is.
Okay, so Borderline with theremin. Diamond Crevasse.
Which was great.
Yes. Remember 16, which was very loose and acoustic and sounded really nice.
Yeah. And now we pulled out...
Then they pulled out the iPhones.
Now, last year, Chia had an iPad and everyone else had iPhones. This time, everyone had iPhones. And they called them the... They came up with a fake band name for this segment.
It's the iPhones.
It was the iPhones.
Right.
That's it, yeah.
With a Z. And they were coming up with nicknames for Chia. Chia Pon. Everyone's calling her Chia Pon. From, I don't know, phone. and it was really cute, and they all had their Max Headroom sunglasses on.
Yes, yeah, they put on sunglasses.
And did, as they did last year, songs using basically a software keyboard.
Which sounded really good.
Like a software Casio keyboard.
So they did... you're singing Popcorn by Hot Butter, aren't you?
No,
anyways.
Anyway, so they did Ninja Loves You, Yeah. And then they Then finally, the non-Macross song of the evening, Lum's Love Song.
From Urusei Yatsura.
Which was really funny because just the night before I had been talking about Urusei Yatsura music with someone.
The crowd got into it. Everyone was skio, skio, skio.
Woohoo!
Everyone
because they didn't
do it on
stage. The crowd did it.
Yeah.
It was actually the week before I finally sat down to watch Beautiful Dreamer.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
Did you make it through? I did not.
I liked it.
Oh my god.
I liked it.
Oh my god.
He likes an Oshi flick.
Oshi.
Hell is frozen.
An Oshi movie.
And I don't think it was because of Oshi, but just the way it was animated. I really, really liked it. And the concept of the whole dream and how like time's going by and no one's noticing it.
Mm.
It's not original in any, I really love how it unfolded. Like, it has a decent beginning, and how it all unfolds and comes to an end is really well done. But I don't follow...
See? It's taken 2 years of living in this apartment to actually get him to like an Oshii movie. My job here is done.
I've never followed that series, so what if I go back and watch series and come back and say, this is...
He got razor blades in the mail. Yeah. Okay, yeah, he got death threats, so...
Yeah, because I really didn't see her as any... She's an important part of the story, but she's not really in the story.
Right.
Yeah,
because it's her dream. But, right. It's good.
Okay. It's actually like Cheryl at the Crossover Live. Anyway. Yes.
Okay, so Lum's Love Song. Then Duck It, Oh Baby. Virgin Story, with the male part taken by her bassist.
Yeah, which they did last time. What they did, Burning Fire, with him doing the role.
Oh, yeah.
And again, the guy's a good bassist. He's not a vocalist.
No,
like they need to get someone else in.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she could do it, couldn't she? Wouldn't be interesting. It would be interesting.
Yeah.
For her to do both parts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hell, I'll go up there.
Finishing with My Friends. And then we got the encore, which was Imo and Pillow Dream.
What did you think of Imo?
It sounded great.
Yeah, I really like Cheers Imo. It's good.
I think Imo's not a bad song. It's just we heard too much of it by Megumi. Different versions.
Right. And Cheryl's version sounds like she's dying.
Yeah, Imo.
Bogarting.
But I think Imo was done really well. Missing in Action was Do You Remember Love? Which she did last year, which was really, really good.
And My Boyfriend's a Pilot.
Right, which was originally done on the keyboard Casio iPhone.
She did nothing from the original Macross.
Well, she did it in the first one. In Million Nights. Beautiful Earth.
Yeah, that's right. She did My Beautiful Place. Yeah, that's right.
She did, yeah. Well, to a karaoke track.
Right.
So
I got put off because I was thinking My Beautiful Dreamer.
Well, what's kind of interesting is they did the... we did a planned encore... But then everyone was really trying to force the third encore.
Right, yeah.
I almost thought it was going to happen.
Yeah, but then the announcer came out and said, no, it's all finished, so please pack up your shit and go home.
And buy another beer.
And get in line for these photos.
And I did.
Yes. Right.
Everyone was in line.
So, I mean, Richard, overall, looking at this, and this is a conceit on my part, but I look at this as one event.
Because it was one event.
I actually would prefer if she charged, say, 1,500 yen on top of the Animania ticket price and called it an intro or a farewell to Milena. Because it was a retrospective, really, to what the event had
been. I think
well, yeah. Good. Yeah, the problem with it, again, was that Milena Night was sold out, but Animania wasn't. So I think a lot of people really missed out. And they didn't have to. If she had put the two things together and just charged, you know, even $100 for it, it probably would have been better than splitting it up into two things.
Right.
I don't know how many people are going to put down $100 for that.
True.
Well, my tickets combined were worth a lot more than $100.
Well, yeah, my tickets were basically $100 when you include the drinks, which you have to. And Richard, when you were going to go up, you thought that to get your ticket, your second one, you thought that it was 3,500, same as the first one.
I thought
right?
it was going to be the same as the first one.
If it had been known to you that it was going to be 55,000, maybe you would have gone home. Because the reason you paid that is probably because, you know, psychologically, you were there.
Right.
And you were like,
at the same time, I am a big Chie fan, and I kind of had faith in her. So if I had cared less,
yeah,
I might have gone home.
So one thing I have noticed, well, because I know you went on the boards and you're like, Chie Night sucked,
right?
Yeah, you know,
but Animania Rock,
was done in a smaller font.
You've been to one of them. You missed them all except for the last one. Mm-hmm. So you basically got to experience the whole thing minus one or two songs.
Plus all
of the special guests on stage.
So you got the best deal.
You kind of got the best deal.
Okay.
In a way, because it took a span of, 2.5 years? 3 to 2.5 years. And a lot more money.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of got a combination plate of what it actually was.
Right.
And you got to see things that you're not going to be able to see again. So it's not... You're going to see Chie and Fukuhama again.
Right.
So, you got a good deal, I think.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think, you know, long live
Animania.
Yeah.
It will be interesting because
the concept
unlike
is
Milene Knight, where she's constantly trying to retweak and rework and restage Milene songs. This, I'm a bit concerned she might become a little stagnant. She's now got 3 years worth of different takes on these songs to mix up again and again.
And that's what Adrian said.
It works for the Rolling Stones. So.
Yeah. Well, that's what Adrian said after the show. He was like, well, this was basically just Milene Knight 3.
Having said that, I don't mind paying to see Milen sing Macross Plus once a year. That's fun. But
she can do it over and over again. Because we know now there's not going to be any CDs ever.
Right.
Or DVDs.
Right.
Speaking of which, let's take a quick break and come back and talk about CMB.
Having once been known as Save Robotech and giving my share of middle fingers to the powers that be and how childish that was at that time, now looking back, and seeing how other fans have come and made websites and online comics or podcasting about the books, and now we have, you know, people in South America doing a live-action fan movie. I mean, that's all great. And we decided early we weren't really going to knock on Robotech or use it as kind of like, you know, a way to insult people. And we have thrown it in from time to time.
Yeah, but Gwen at one point was like, should we talk about Love, Live, Alive? And I was like, no.
Yeah, and we only referenced it to FP7.
Right.
And just like in really light jest, so we've really kept away from bringing Robotech into our podcast. Robotech to the rescue. But being that this is Robotech Valkyrie Project, we have kind of said, well, why are they using the word Valkyrie?
Valkyrie does appear in one episode of Robotech.
And
the word
which
Valkyrie.
Saga? Macross?
Macross Saga.
Okay.
Bye-bye Mars.
Global at one point says, like, send out the Valkyrie squadrons or
yeah.
something like that.
Really? Valkyrie yeah. squadrons! Which I think is just a part of the script that they forgot to edit for Robotech.
Which happens a lot.
They translated it first and then...
The whole, you know, yeah. you always wanted to destroy the town, mm. that kind of thing.
Yeah. You said, no, was, you said you wanted to destroy the town.
No, he didn't.
And, yeah, I was watching it thinking, when did he say this, maybe?
Yeah.
That was the other guy. That was Arihiro Hase.
But we try to play clean over here, and we don't try to, you know, give too much people shit, aside from ourselves, the people
right.
we know involved in the cast.
We
so.
Give each other way more shit than we give anyone else.
And obviously we all know that there was the C&D order, that the production creator, what is it?
CreaVision.
CreaVision received. I was informed by Totoro that, hey, did you hear that they got the C&D from Harmony Gold? And I'm like, why would they get a C&D when Harmony Gold has promoted this?
Right.
And not only has Harmony Gold promoted it online, they've done it at cons because Memo's recorded it and put them up online. And there's also, they actually did a full, like, news broadcast of this production on like news in South America that
right.
people like pointed to.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
Yeah, they made it onto the local news.
A real
right.
TV
while they were filming in the street and
saying they got permission to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
And as you said, Harmony Gold used the trailer to play at con panels.
And you watched. It was like I don't know which panel it was. It was one of the many Robotech panels that just repeat the same stuff, and they talk about fan, you know, look at what this fan project's doing, and you know, it's kind of like downplaying the quality of it at the same time, saying something to the fact of kind of like, you know,
when we do the Robotech live action movie, man,
yeah, kind of like,
that'll be something.
So yeah, they've promoted it, they've talked about it, they've acknowledged it, and then all of a sudden one day, bam, they get a C&D, and CreaVision goes and puts up that they, you know, they regret having to do what they did. They're pulling everything down, and everyone fell for them. Like, we all kind of were just like, oh, that kind of sucks.
And I mean, the backlash against Harmony Gold was astonishing.
Yeah. And I think we should make a note here. I mean, we've all watched it, right? I mean, yeah. Richard, you watched it today, but I'd been watching it, and I was fairly... I thought what they were doing was interesting. It was pretty high production value. It was like semi-pro. I wouldn't call it amateur.
Well, this is where... The CreaVision is a company, and the guy does do special effects for several TV shows.
Yeah, I mean, it's
he's done History Channel.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like so the stuff on the History Channel where it's like, if a tsunami hit New York, how bad would it be?
Like simulations? But yeah. No, he did like some stuff for the History Channel, which was like recreating some I don't know what it was, some World War II invasion or something. So they're not complete amateurs, like with a couple of computers. This is a company, I think, production.
But and they said, like right from the beginning, because there was another fan production that got slammed a few years ago, the Robotech Genesis.
Yeah.
That was all CGI, and. And after that got the CND, CreaVision announced theirs, and so everything that they posted said, this is a not-for-profit fan film. And they have hammered that in from the beginning.
Right.
Because that previous, the other animation, what was that called? Robotech Genesis?
Yeah.
Yeah. That went on for a while.
Right.
And they were promoting it as a fan film. Everyone knew it was a fan film.
Right.
And but Harmony Gold didn't acknowledge it, really. It was just on the forums between other posters.
Right.
And it didn't seem that Harmony Gold actually got involved until they actually animated scenes of characters. And I remember they having Glovel in it.
Huh. Right, yeah, because they got the voice actor.
And then it came
to the actual voice actor.
They got right.
So I remember...
Greg Finley.
The images of Glovel showing up, and then pretty relatively close to that, then it got shut down.
Right. And after it got shut down, then all of this speculation started flurrying with a whole bunch of people saying, well, they were trying to get a profit from it, whereas they always maintained, no, this was just a fan film. And you have some wildly contradictory stories about what was going on with that, which... seemed to me kind of like damage control.
Yeah, when I saw that, I was just thinking, okay, as a group of fans, and everyone's kind of throwing work together, and they're mashing it together, editing it together, Harmony Gold came in and said, don't go any further. And that's basically how it goes in most cases. But this Project Valkyrie thing, again, the news coverage, it's been going. Mm-hmm. Harmony Gold's promoting it. It didn't make sense that they got the C&D. Unless it's coming from somewhere else, and Harmony Gold is being made to give them this order. And the first speculation, I think, was everyone saying, oh, it's Warner Brothers. It's Warner Brothers. Right. Because Warner Brothers is probably going to do it. And that's all speculation that everyone assumed Warner Brothers is the one that made Harmony Gold.
Which, again, I mean, this looked good, but it didn't look that good.
Well, it's first of all, it's speculation. The Warner Brothers stuff, at least, is speculation that has neither been denied or confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
And having said that, if they've bought the rights to this property, you know, with the only right they have to it is to bring it live action to the big screen, and then they see that the rights holder that they've purchased this from is not enforcing and cracking down on these fans who are creating a live-action version with the designs that are from the property they've licensed. I can see the logic in thinking they might have come down and say, hey, no, we have a bigger legal department than you, and you should be protecting the rights you've sold to us and not letting other people infringe on them. That could be a possibility. Again, this is all speculation, but from my experience with IP licensing, I could see how that might be...
At the same time, I would think if it was Warner Brothers, they probably would have sent the C&D themselves.
Themselves, yes, again, that's something, well. So,
because they already have contracts, they already have a bigger legal department, they would have contacted them directly.
Right. So,
well, we all kind of just talked about it, and it was not really that big a deal. It was right. more, again, it was just, Harmony Gold, same old,
Harmony
same
Gold.
Old. Yeah.
I was enjoying the hate mail that was showing up on
the Robotech's Facebook page
and in the thread on Robotech.com, both of which places I am banned from. I don't know why I was banned from the Facebook page. I never posted anything negative there.
But, and, it's all negative. You hear all this negative stuff, and a lot of it points to Tommy, and that's not really fair.
Right, again, it's people placing blame based on speculation.
Yeah.
I mean, Tommy is not a legal department.
Yeah. They're a small crew. The Robotech team is a small team. They are not the legal team of Harmony Gold.
And Harmony Gold has about, 20 employees or something like that?
I have no idea, but they obviously paid a professional legal person to do their stuff, I'm sure.
Yes.
Or somebody there. And when all this is going around, eventually over at Robotech X, you have somebody kind of trying to hint, like, well, what if the possibility if they got it from Big West?
No, that happened on Robotech.com first.
Someone
said, well, maybe it was Big West, and then...
you can do the name, though.
Okay, Maverick LSC was like, well, yeah, if Big West did it, I don't see why they would do it. I mean, I can see that it would be possible, but they would really be just creating a whole bunch of bad publicity for themselves. And it would be like shooting themselves in the foot. Now, you know, I guess it could be them. Pure speculation, of course.
Yeah. I read that, I think, posted over at Robotech X.
Okay.
And my initial reaction is just, well, he's uninformed. and that was kind of it. It didn't make me angry. It didn't.
Right.
I had no reaction other than, wait a minute, isn't this the same guy that has posted a million times that Big West can't do anything anyway? So
right.
Robotech is Robotech, and ha ha ha,
right.
to that effect.
Yeah.
And now he's kind of coming back and saying, well, you know, they could have.
Again, he did not come out and say that they did it.
No, but it's just, again, it's just, that doesn't make sense to all the stuff you have been spouting that I've read.
But which is basically that Harmony Gold owns, to Kevin McKeever's line, Harmony Gold owns all the rights to Robotech. Big West, they are, you know, other people have said Big West, yeah, they only have it in Japan. They cannot do anything outside.
You mean all the rights to Macross?
What?
You mean all the rights to Macross?
The way he puts it is Harmony Gold has all the rights to Robotech.
Okay.
That's the way he phrases it at the cons. What that means is kind of an open question.
What you just said is probably going to end up in some posts where this certain person that said that is going to say you said it wrong.
Right. I am not saying it
but
wrong.
As you're saying, Adrian, that was just...
But it was
yeah,
laughable.
Whatever, these people don't... That, as you said, they are uninformed.
Yeah, that's
but
what I would
But then mean. Things kind of stepped up a notch.
Yeah, and again, I'm minding my own business, and you come in and you say, hey, Creepin has just put up that it was Big West that did it.
And Andrew Colley, Veef, sent me a message saying, how does that schadenfreude feel now?
So, Gwen tells me this, and it's immediate, like, god damn you, like, why do you always make me look at this stuff? Seriously.
Renato, stop
smiling. Happens a lot. It happens, I'm just like... Mind my own business. Like, I don't really care what so-and-so just said or how idiotic they sound. I look at it and I'm just like, release the hounds.
And the hounds were released. Now, the problem is the way Creo Vision was putting it up was not speculation.
Right.
It was not as if, you know, we've heard this might have happened. And granted, the people posting this are not native English speakers, So they may have wanted it to sound like it was speculative, but didn't know how to phrase it correctly.
I don't think so.
But they just put up there that, yeah, we have been told, we've heard that this is all going back to the legal rights holder in Japan, Big West, and, you know, we don't know any details of the C&D yet, which immediately set off alarms for me, because I'm like, how can you not know the details behind the C&D that you've supposedly received? That means that there's no legal documentation or you're talking out of your ass.
No.
Well, and then Kevin McKeever said that he had no details on the C&D.
Gwyn has seen a document in the case of Macross that would be sent for a rights type of...
I'm familiar. I've come across those kind of documents in my travels.
So... it tells you what you've done. And
I've dealt with C&Ds as part of my job, which is unfortunately not Macross related.
Yeah.
Like to change that sometime, guys. Big West, if you're listening. I'm familiar with how the way C&Ds work at a non-legal level, but I'm familiar enough with the language involved. And like they generally tell you who is demanding it. If it's being demanded by another party, they normally explicitly state that, from the ones I've come across, because you need to know where this is coming from so blame doesn't get placed on the wrong party.
No,
so,
which is exactly what's happening here.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the fact that they stated it as fact but then had no details just stank to high heaven.
Well, and they deleted the Facebook post almost immediately.
Right.
Yes. The Twitter, that stayed up.
The Twitter stayed up.
That's still there.
Because I remember...
Twitter and the one in Spanish, mainly. So remember, I told you, and you got, and you were questioning me after this.
Oh God, I was.
Where, yeah, the guy Cesar Torturo.
Yes.
Right. He was asked a question on his Twitter and said, "Well, you said it was Big West, right? So who's Big West? What is this company about?" And Cesar Torturo responded in Spanish, and he was like, "I don't know. Is this company in Japan? I don't know what's going on. I guess they hold the Macross rights in Japan or something like that. Yeah. I'm not sure."
Yeah, because that was the day that was before Chie when we were waiting for Gwyn, and then we caught up. We went to a cafe, and Renato's like, "He's saying he's never heard of Big West. He has no idea what they do." Yeah. And I'm looking at Renato like,
yeah, he's angry with me.
What the hell are you talking about?
Adrian is pissed off with me, and I'm like, I'm just relaying what I read.
But he's like, no. He's like, do you think everybody knows Macross and this and this? And I'm like, no, it's just called Robotech Valkyrie Project.
You don't need to know.
You don't need to know Big West to know Valkyrie.
But
that's like saying, do you know who Studio OX is, but you know Optimus Prime, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
At the same
time,
nobody
knows where all these things come from.
You know, Memo has spoken to these people. And Memo is a good friend of mine. I don't put him down. I know he's got bad blood between people, but between me and Memo are decent friends. But I know Memo would go through everything and say, well, there's Big West, and we can do this, we can do that, whether
which
it's good or bad.
Been.
And I'm sure he has.
He has been, you know? He's been quite blatant about it.
I would assume that they do know exactly who it is or what. Why it was said is just idiotic. But, again, they put the post up, and it was all in Spanish, and I think you were replying pretty early.
Yeah, no, I as soon as... Because Andrew was the first one to contact me, and I think I told Gwyn about it.
You did some others soon after, yeah.
And
what did you think of the wording? Wasn't it funny that they thanked Harmony Gold several times within that? They were like, thank you very much
for your
collaboration. Yeah, the original one. Mm. And we hope that...
Well, no, I'm talking about the Big West one, when he put that up. Finally, on their Facebook page, because the Big West speculation was gaining a certain amount of traction. Some people were, like, buying into it whole hog. Some people were being very cautious about it. Some people were outright disbelieving it. And I finally just went to the Creative Vision Facebook page and asked, wait, who sent the C&D? And they answered pretty quickly, Harmony Gold did. And I said, okay, so how did Big West name get involved? And That was about a week and a half ago, and no one has answered that.
So there are theories, which I won't mention here because it's not worth pointing fingers, even though some people deserve to have fingers pointed at them. But let's get to the main point here, which is, as Adrian said, the hounds were released. And Renato, I know you did this as well. I know some people on the forums did it as well, but people got in touch with Big West. Big West got quite a couple of emails from people and queries. Now, there are limits on what can be said here, but there is no official statement from Big West on this issue, and there will not be, because it's to do with Robotech. Yeah. And they have no domain, no control over what happens to Robotech or anything associated with it outside of Japan. So why would an official notice or statement on this thing be necessary?
Well, to answer your question, one reason, libel.
Yeah.
No, no.
I know, but I'm just speaking strictly logically as, you know, where the...
There is no connection whatsoever.
Right.
Apart from the fact that Big West was named by name.
Right.
So, at that point, I would say if they were to get involved, it would be within that context.
And we're not going Laszlo Zand on anyone. Don't worry about that.
What about what one?
JT will understand.
So, oh,
good. I'm sure he cut that out.
For anyone,
if he gets past the 30-second mark.
for anyone who is looking for an official, you know, reply from Big West, there won't be one forthcoming, but they shouldn't need to, because all the dots, when put together, show quite clearly they had nothing to do with this. And the big reaction most people who contacted them are getting is just a big, like, what? Why would... Howard, think.
And also, they've never shut down fan projects before.
Yeah, and no, there are so many fan projects in Japan.
Right. But we know what the smoking gun is, right? HG shuts down every fan project that exists.
It's their MO, really.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, I can only think of one thing that they've shut down.
Cheer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, we just shot ourselves in the foot.
Yeah.
I don't even think they're the one that shut it down. I think it's all the music. Like, all the music writers. Like,
Flying
everything
Dog.
That's involved. Yeah, Flying Dog, probably.
Yeah.
And again, it's probably them saying, hey, there's this kind of thing. Milane's kind of a... We haven't released a Milane album, but we have paid to do it if we choose to. So, why is this going on? Yeah.
Well, that's a whole different topic.
Right, yeah.
So that's that. But as far as the actual Valkyrie project, when I watched it, or even as they were showing previews, the trailers, in my background, again, I used to work at an animation school, and I used to have to work with students on critiquing their demo reels, and I learned 3D animation in a...
So happy I wasn't one of these students.
Damn straight you weren't. And back in the U.S., my instructor, when I was learning 3D animation, the things you do not do on your demo reel is, one, robots. Never do robots. And never do space battles.
Why is that?
Because that kind of animation in 3D, you're just using techniques that are very basic. Because... if you're doing a organic human body, that takes more talent to animate and make realistic compared to
a robot. Yeah.
I'm not saying, and I think this also affects why a lot of people think that Pacific Rim was snubbed for an Oscar award.
Mm.
They didn't do anything inventive. They just used techniques that other things that have came before them and done them really well for a robot movie, so they didn't fit in that category to receive an Academy Award. As much as we like it, and much how good it looks, it's still...
Wait.
Yeah. You know. Well, robots. I'm sorry, look... Okay, I'm not going in. It's okay, we have this discussion.
You like robots, Renato. Yeah.
It's just, no matter how wonderful it looks for that kind of production, on a technical level of giving an Oscar or fine-tuning it, it's just not, like, really that... invented. I don't know how you'd say it. But anyways, going back to the students, we always tell them, don't do robots, don't do spaceship battles. Do something else. And when I look at these fan projects that are like this. One, I'm like, why are you doing an existing IP if you've got this much talent?
Right.
And do something that's, make something, be inspired by it, make something better, or just something different, and you'll be recognized for that. They were purely recognized for the Robotech name. That's what got them their, you know,
coverage.
Their coverage, right. Which is great for them, and it might work out for them financially in the future because now they're getting notice. But they're announcing they're doing something new, and it's just kind of like, eh, whatever. And just looking at it, yeah, there was some really good stuff. The Zentradi organic stuff was nice. A lot of the 3D Veritech Valkyrie stuff I didn't really think looked that good. So I was impressed on some things, but not impressed on others. And I just hate it when fans...
Gosh.
No, they just... No, not the fans, but when they do a fan project, they're like, here's a trailer, here's a trailer, here's a trailer, here's a trailer. It's like, stop with the trailers, just finish the damn thing and put it up. And this was another thing of trailer, trailer, trailer. Oh, we're going to release 10 minutes, 10 minutes, then you don't get shit. Mm-hmm. So it's always the same scenario.
Yeah, I know that originally they hadn't said they were going to split it into 10 to 3 10-minute parts. And then just before Christmas, like, well, here, we want to get something up now. This is what we've done. And right. I just think, you know what? If they hadn't have done that, if they hadn't waited and put the full 30 minutes up, everyone would have gotten to see it in its entirety before it got pulled. So, but, you know, 2020 hindsight and all that.
It's better to do it and seek forgiveness than to seek permission.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, they sought permission. They had
I don't know. I just thought it was... It's cool.
It was alright. Yeah,
I mean, I thought they had a great eye for actual cinematography. A lot of the angles used, a lot of the shots were a lot more professional looking than most fan films. But I also thought that the overall framing of the story and characters was far too Hollywood.
Yeah.
Down to the Top Gun references.
Which they even pointed out.
Yeah.
In the thing itself.
But you know, there's satire, and then there's, like, satiring yourself, but then continuing to do it.
Right.
Yeah, watching it, like, they had to do, like, you know, like, the basically inverted. The inverted flight. And that's wasted render time, really. You just wasted a lot of time. You could have did something... Within that 10-minute window, that 30 seconds could have been something different and, like, new.
Well, I don't think it's really our place to, like, do a detailed critique of
Valkyrie
Project,
time.
Right?
No.
Just because it's more, this is a release the hounds moment, right?
Well, at least we watched it. Yeah. I never got to see any of the English sub version.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't know what the story was.
The thing is, that's still available on YouTube.
I guess I'll watch
it's
it,
only so. The Creavisions account that had to pull it.
Right.
The mirrors with English and Japanese subtitles are still there.
The backlash on this is astonishing. Just that so many fans are really rallying behind this and putting it up on YouTube dozens of times over and over. Sending so many messages to Harmony Gold that, I can see why they would want to deflect the blame.
Well, as a MegaZone 2-3 fan, their backlash is misplaced. It should all be against them doing what they did to Eve.
Right. Turning Eve into a 12-year-old girl.
Who's a computer virus, pretty much.
Right.
I thought you guys weren't going to get into this story.
Right, yeah, no.
Like I said, I'm sure episode 3 had everybody fly into Danger Zone.
Right. And again, Harmony Gold has said nothing about like Big West one way or another.
Right.
That is entirely unofficial.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we bring you Renato's Super Die Mentionables Corner. Forum topic. Is Macross becoming too expensive?
All right. Welcome to this edition of Renato's Super Dimensionable Corner. And tonight we've got another exciting episode of Renato's Super Dimensional Corner. Tonight's topic is Macross becoming too expensive? Take it away.
Thank you. I've never had so many introductions in my life. I must have done something really well. I decided it would be interesting to kind of spice up the conversation here, not just talk about events and things like that. That's always fun as well. But, you know, you can use this avenue to discuss a lot of the things that are actually happening within the fandom right now and how that relates to maybe other things that are happening outside of the fandom. This is interesting, particularly for Macross, because, of course, we know that Macross is only a product that is aimed for the Japanese domestic market. So, you know, it relates to us as foreign consumers of Macross products, i.e. we have to import them to our respective countries.
Can we jump in for a moment here, Renato, and just, I think, give... the idea behind this was that there are a lot of really good topics brought up over at the Macross World forums, but we don't want to keep this too inside a baseball and be mentioning what so-and-so, this person said this and that person said that. But some of the topics, you know, as just general topics, lend themselves really well to discussion. And there was a thread relatively recently, which, granted, was related in its original form mostly to toys.
Yeah.
That was talking about the increased price of Valkyries.
Yeah.
And how their local toy shop no longer stocked any import Valkyries because they were too expensive and didn't necessarily sell at the prices they were asking. So I think, Renato, your idea was this was to maybe expand this more into the overall cost of being a Macross fan. Was that where you're coming from?
Yeah. Yes. So the problem with this is that we have to think about it in terms of these items not only not being marketed towards us as foreign consumers based everywhere around the world, but also marketed to a specific target market which is used to spending a certain amount of money, maybe setting aside a certain amount of money for specific items, and having been brought up in this evolving market. Right. If you're just coming into it, then yes, you might be shocked if, for example, we were just talking about Arcadia YF-19, 32,000 yen or something like that. Yes, that is a lot for a transforming toy. The giant gun, the Nerf gun, GU-11 thing, 11 man, right? So 110,000 yen, 150,000 yen for the online thing with stickers. 100. What's the next one? I don't know, it's 128,000 and then 150,000 right. For the super duper EX edition. Now, that is a lot for a toy gun. However, the otaku who frequent events like Wonderfest and who spend a lot of time and effort and money getting just to the event know that they're expected to invest a certain amount of time and effort into this to begin with. Now, it all depends on where you're coming from, right? So, what the way I want to frame this is in terms like with a timeline, right? So, 10 years ago, where were we? Were these items as expensive as they are now, relatively speaking? I mean, we had a wave kit, a wave toy of the SDF-1, which is probably around the same. I don't remember exactly how big it was. But actually, I think it was even bigger than 11 centimeters. Wasn't it like 14 centimeters? Hmm. The wave, the tiny one. And that was... Oh.
The WHAM one.
Yeah, wham!
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Last Christmas, I gave you 14,000 yen for a transforming SDF-1. Does it work? It works. Okay, so... I thought that was expensive at the time. 14,000 yen for a tiny thing? And now you're telling me that it's a kit. and it's 7,500. So I got to put all the time and effort on top of that. Yeah, and it's smaller. And so I can understand where a lot of people would be coming from if they were saying, hey, this is a tiny thing. You know, you can get the Wave 1, which would be cheaper right now. The same thing with the YF-19. This is the first Valkyrie, I think, that has gone past the 30,000 yen mark.
Right.
Unless you count the VF-17 with fast packs. That if you include the tax, that went over 30,000, I think, as well.
Right.
10 years ago, we had the 148. That was the first Valkyrie that went over 10,000. And at the time, we were having the exact same discussion. So, this is really nothing new. It's not a new concept, but it is true that things are getting more and more expensive. So,
but are they? But are they, is my question. And I'll give you two examples.
Okay.
With regards to Valkyries, keeping in mind that Arcadia, or in the past Yamato, does not have the Frontier license, and as such, they are having to appeal to an increasingly smaller niche.
Right.
Because there aren't much in the way of new viewers, let alone ones that are interested, have the money or space in Japan to invest in these Valkyries. Into these older series, all the newer fans are Frontier fans, which is, of course, the Bandai license, and surprise, surprise, with that larger consumer base, the Chogokin Valks are much more affordable,
yeah,
relatively speaking, at least. Now, because Arcadia's market is increasingly niche, and they're increasingly putting more sophisticated engineering into new products, and it's a market they've been serving under the guise of Yamato for over a decade, it's a market that has already got product out there. Every time, as their quality goes up and they do new products, they're targeting a smaller user base.
Exactly.
And yeah, the price is going to go up. And then, of course, there's other variables like the price of the factories in China, which we've covered in the past.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, to answer your question, but are they? Well, yeah, they are. But here we are trying to find reasons to justify that markup.
Well, that's in the case of Valkyries. And I think the adult collector toys market really was in its infancy 10 years ago. It's nowhere near where it is now, where you have, you know, Hot Toys doing $400 Iron Man figures, or there's a $450 Captain Harlock with Captain's Chair figure coming out, you know.
Right, so that's why at the beginning, in the introduction, I brought up the issue of we got to position this with regards to the market that actually is being targeted, which is, of course, one where things like Hot Toys and things are accessible to us here, right? Whereas a lot of people who are complaining that this is too expensive and that maybe Arcadia is pricing themselves out of their market, which, you know, is really unfounded for many reasons, they're comparing it to, you know, toys that they can buy at, like, Walmart and things like that. They walk into Walmart or Target and they see Transformers on the shelf. So, you know, Alita class Optimus Prime toy, we'll get you, how much is it, like, well, 50, 40, maybe even 30
despite the fact that I'm sure a much larger percentage of Arcadia sales than they are willing to admit do go to overseas buyers, the fact of the matter is the people making these comments are unfortunately not part of their market.
Yeah.
They can't legally target you. I'm sure they'd love to and have a full English support service, but they can't. You want to buy their stuff? That's great, and they really appreciate that, I'm sure. But unfortunately, they've got to aim it for the Japanese market, base their projections on what the Japanese consumer can spend, is willing to spend, and how many of them there are.
And what the Japanese consumer wants to buy.
Right.
And when you say Japanese consumer, this goes back to the whole thing about pricing themselves out, or, you know, at the end of the day, these are niche items, all of them, everything. Really. If you're targeting anything to a small fan base, then you are a niche.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter how big the Macross name really is, because at the end of the day, you're going to be subconsciously comparing it to the American toy market anyway, or the worldwide toy market. And that is a much, much bigger number of consumers than are in Japan.
Can I ask you, Renato, in your years in Japan, or before you came to Japan, but maybe meeting even Japanese Macross fans, how many Japanese Macross fans have you come across with this mentality? And I don't mean that in a negative sense.
Yeah.
That they've got to buy all the valves.
Yeah.
Because I find that collector's mentality is something I come across much more in foreign fandom.
Yeah.
Whereas most Japanese fans, granted, there's more open to them. There's more visible. They have events. You know, they have concerts. They have figures. They have Ichiban Kuji. They don't... Like, buying Valkyries is not necessarily their main form of supporting
the franchise. No, and increasingly it isn't.
Increasingly it isn't.
That's why you've got all these really, really limited numbers of Valkyries being produced to begin with. And the only person that I know that collects everything, absolutely everything, is the number one Macross fan.
Yeah.
And even he.
I mean, granted, I saw him on the weekend purchase an Arcadia Valkyrie to get the free badges that came with it.
Oh, cool.
He already owned it, I think.
That's hardcore. Yeah, so that doesn't... it doesn't account for... There are no collectors, and they don't have space anyway.
Exactly, like, that's another huge thing, yeah. Can I ask you, though, Renato, do you want to limit this discussion to just toys?
No, I don't.
Because if we look further afield, something I hear from fans is, okay, the cost of CDs and the cost of the animation itself.
Look, even going to gigs, you know, you have to put so much money into... join the fan club so you can get the early draw tickets,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know... Was it last time or a couple of podcasts ago you were saying that you had to re-enter the fan club? And no one complains about this.
Well, having said that, that's not...
In my discussions, I've never heard of anyone complaining that things are too expensive anyway.
It's the whole concept of events being premium. You jump through the hoops needed because they're never going to be released.
Right. Otherwise, what kind of a fan are you is the kind of, you know, they will never say it.
Right.
But that's what, you know, Hisami was looking at me funny when I was saying I'm not part of the fan club. And she was like, so are you going on the 15th or are you going on the 22nd? And I'm like, what's going on the 15th? And I say, oh, she's like, you're totally out of the loop. Didn't you know that Fukuyama's having a gig? And I'm like, no, I didn't. But thanks for telling me. Yeah, I might try to get tickets for that. And she's like, no, too late now. You can't. So you have to, you know, it's your duty as a fan.
When we say fandom here is a niche. There are just hundreds of niches for every type of fan.
And that goes with just the makeup of how these subcultures are positioned within overall society.
I do think, though, your example of the fan club maybe isn't the best because it's not a situation foreign fans would ever find themselves faced with.
No, but it does really contribute to the kind of the psyche, overall psyche, the way that people think, the fans think here in terms of investment,
Let's compare.
Which is not present in the foreign fandom, and that's why there's such a kind of a disconnect between these prices seeming expensive or seeming reasonable.
Let's compare this for a moment then. Richard.
Yeah.
You've seen Mario Jima play in the US.
Yes.
How much was it to get into one of those gigs?
$10.
So in Japan, she plays an annual 2 gigs in the same day, a lunch and an evening. Yeah. The vast majority of fans go to both. They are 8,000 yen or $80 or so for each gig. So that's $160. And they're going to probably buy some postcards or a t-shirt as well. So scratch it up to an average of $200 for a single day of being a Macross fan. And they do it because they know that if they don't support Mari, she will not be making more music. And therefore, she won't be coming to Japan.
Yeah.
And if she, you know, the whole idea of support is something that's really, really... a part of the fandom here. For every time I hear someone claim online, Japanese fans are complete fools. Why on earth would people pay these prices for Blu-rays or these prices for anime? First, it's all targeted at niche markets who are willing to pay that amount. It's not that they like paying it, but there is a very strong connection and realization. You don't pay for what you like, there's not going to be any more of it. You hear about people supporting the fan base. If the Japanese didn't support what they're into here, it would never make it to the West at all.
At the same time. Mm-hmm. So, like, the downside of all that is... Well, not the downside, but the flip side, rather.
Is my bank account.
No. You're expected to like, work 3 or 4 jobs to make ends meet, by which I mean have a Valkyrie... a closet full of Valkyries. If your target market is a niche subculture and you are making the most of your product based on a 30-year-old franchise, how much is it expanding really at the end of the day? How many new people are you bringing in? The new people, the younger generation that has been coming in, has been because of Frontier,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's possibly given the franchise a new lease of life. But let's compare it to another franchise like Orgus, for example. There are no new Orgus fans,
man. You had to bring it in somehow, didn't you?
Yes, I did. There are no new Orgus fans, and this niche is getting smaller and smaller and getting more and more difficult to release.
But what are they doing anyway? There is no new Orgus anything, right?
Well, that's because there's no people that they can bank on to actually buy their product because they've missed the boat on that.
Okay, yeah? You're saying they missed the boat, okay.
Yeah, and this is a worry for a lot of people online. I've heard this opinion a lot. You know, if they keep making more and more expensive items, including Valkyries, or maybe mostly Valkyries, people aren't going to support them anymore as much as they would like to. And more people aren't going to be coming into the franchise because there would already be an established fan base. You have to be a fan in order to you know, have this thing targeted towards you, right? There's no new opening for this. So products are going to get more and more expensive, people are going to be priced down, and the fans themselves are going to get smaller and smaller. So people are worried about the future of the franchise for this. They're saying this was not part of the more recent topic that started this, but a while back I heard someone, I can't remember what his name was, someone had the great idea of marketing Valkyries for children. Like, make new child-friendly toys.
Like they're doing with the Transformers line.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to work because of the way that this franchise recognition works over here. It's got to be
right
to these fans.
Having said that, in the case of Macross, because of Frontier, I mean, if you look at where the bulk of Frontier's merchandising is, it isn't Valkyries.
No, it isn't, right.
Yeah,
you know, right.
It is the figures.
Yeah.
It is the CD. Now, the figure prices, they're not cheap, but they're not...
But there are cheap alternatives, right?
There's a much wider variety in prices.
Yeah.
The price of CDs has not changed, ever.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still hear people complain, why would I pay 3,000 yen for a Japanese CD? Because that's what people have paid since CDs were first brought
invented,
out.
Yeah.
You compare that to DVDs. I was here when the first Matrix movie came out. And the standard edition of that was over $100.
Mm.
Compared to now. So everything else seems to have gone down. CDs have remained the same. They haven't gone up. You look at Blu-rays, and I think we've mentioned this before, but you look at the VHS release of Do You Remember Love compared to the relatively recent release of the Blu-ray, the special edition Blu-ray, the bare bones VHS was more than the Super Duper box. Yeah, it had a trailer and the movie, and that was it. The Super Duper box with the remaster and the extras disc and flashback and the game and documentaries
and the pictures
and the books and the
reproduction,
all that, and the film strip. All that came to about 2,000 yen cheaper than the bare bones VHS back in the day. So things, not everything is getting more expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but it seems more expensive because from where foreign consumers are coming from, they've never been faced with having to pay that much.
Right.
You know? And you and I got livid at that one comment on that Facebook thing where the guy said, well, you've paid your dues because we all paid those exorbitant prices back in the day when we bought them on VHS.
Right.
Yeah, no, that doesn't entitle you to own a pristine, you know, remastered Blu-ray quality picture.
Rip, yeah.
Rip, right. Yeah. So,
Can I ask you, though, do you not think that some fans today are becoming actually more educated outside of Japan to these pricing structures? Look at, is it Aniplex? They're releasing their Japanese box sets pretty much as is, because they'll release a Blu-ray series in Japan. They'll have English subtitles on it. They'll release it limited edition, say 1,000 copies, at pretty much Japanese prices. Recent examples being, I think, Fate Zero.
Yeah.
And Gurren Lagann.
Yeah.
Was like $500 or something. But those things sell out every time on pre-orders, and that's the exact same business model as Japan. They've picked their niche, they've priced to the niche, and it sells out.
I think there's a group of...
Bandai was doing that too.
I was going to go into that, but I think... But that was like, what, 10 years ago, right?
Not that long.
No. Well, it was around 2004, 2005.
when
that was 10 years ago.
I'm old.
No, yes, when they were coming out with MS Igloo, that was a little more recent. That was like
I'm thinking about like the Pat Labor movies.
Okay, I was thinking about MS Igloo, which was like three episodes on a DVD for $50.
Yeah, that was like Bandai Visual USA.
Yeah.
So there's two things going on here. Number one is, I'll begin with that. Bandai Visual kind of jumped the gun a lot in terms of what you were bringing up. At that point, the fans still had not accepted that pricing structure. That the mentality just hadn't matured, you know, not to bring a negative or positive aspect into it. It just hadn't developed to that point. And so, you know, eventually Bandai USA had to retire from the Western market completely, right? As far as I understand it. And
I'm not sure that was the reason, but yeah, they did.
Well, there was a lot of reasons.
Right.
And what happened with Aniplex is much more recent, right?
Yeah.
I think in the last 10 years or so, you're seeing a section, just a section of the anime market, the Western anime fandom, starting to become a lot like the Japanese anime fandom. It's not necessarily representative of all consumers of Japanese animation. Certainly
not. Of course
not. But there is that. There is a growing acceptance of.
I think that this is reflective of just modern distribution methods. You're going to have your overwhelming mainstream casual user who doesn't want a copy of their own. They just want to watch it. It's consumable and disposable media.
Yeah.
They watch their weekly episode and that's it. So they're fine with stuff like Crunchyroll or Hulu to get their anime. Small interjection here. Japanese fans have nothing like Crunchyroll. You have the Bandai channel, which is $10 a month, pretty much, and you get mostly older Bandai shows, not all the newer ones, and it can be watched on your computer. There's no real good television option for it. But you compare that to Crunchyroll, where you get nearly all the newest shows every season, where over here a lot of people have to pay cable subscriptions for.
I'll take that up a level.
Crunchyroll is blocked here, so I always hate it whenever anyone links to a Crunchyroll news article where it's like,
you can use a proxy.
If
you don't want to own a physical copy, it is a hell of a lot cheaper to be an anime fan outside of Japan than it is to be an anime fan inside Japan.
You can take that up to like the general online viewer here in Japan and say that they don't even have anything like Hulu, really, because Hulu exists, but you still have to pay for it.
Right.
The concept is completely different in that case.
Right.
So that is certainly a revolution that I don't think is happening anytime soon. Gradually it will, but it's not going to be a huge explosion.
But I think, as I said, in the West you have that option, or outside of Japan you have that option. Granted, there's a lot of countries outside the US that also do not have that option. I get that.
Yeah, they get blocked.
But, you know, for a lot of users, they have Crunchyroll for your mainstream audiences, and then you're going to have the small niche of collectors who are going to pay $200, $300, $400 for these 1,000 copy limited print runs. And I think those two audiences can live side by side. The problem is when one feels when either the content's not made available to both, i.e. just make a standard definition for streaming, or when people feel entitled and want it completely high definition, perfect, for free.
Yeah.
I think those are the two main issues. Although, maybe we're getting a bit off topic here. We should bring back the Macross.
Well, is Macross becoming too expensive? It depends on how you consume Macross, how you choose to consume Macross. I do buy occasionally Valkyries, but I haven't bought any recently, and this whole thing about Bandai limiting the numbers and the 5-second pre-order windows is absolutely ridiculous, and I miss the days of being able to walk into a store and buy stuff off the shelf, right? Like I explained before, the Osmo thing.
Is that Bandai's fault, or is that...
No.
The consumer
it's the consumer
that's trying to buy it and then the other consumer that's trying to buy 10 of them to sell for like 3 mana.
It's not just that. It's there are less consumers of that type of product, as we've described before.
Yeah.
To begin with, there are less consumers, and so therefore, all it takes is one greedy consumer to take all. So it's a lot of dynamics that are coming together, and we wouldn't really have that problem if it wasn't such a niche as it is now. Like, so the toys are a niche within a niche, in a sense.
Right, and here's this term that I think always needs to be defined.
Niche.
Yeah. Because everything in Japan is a niche. We're getting to the point where Gundam is getting more niche than it used to be. Because a
Gundam
lot of,
has always been niche, though. It's a large niche.
It's a very large niche. It's got very mainstream recognition, but the mainstream aren't paying for the Blu-rays or buying the soundtracks.
Animation itself is a niche. There are no primetime animations anymore, except for maybe... Chibi Maruko-chan, Detective Conan,
right.
Space Brothers.
Well, I mean, Gundam, it's like I've seen Star Trek, but I don't buy like
exactly. That's a really
good toys point. Or and model kits or anything.
With
for it.
Macross, you know, we spend hours, as I apologize, talking about events every podcast, and it makes Macross seem much more mainstream, I guess, than it is. But the whole point is,
at the end of the day, we meet the same people there.
We meet the same people every time. These are the people supporting the show, and it's because we're here that we know what's on, that we can get to these events, whereas most normal Japanese have no idea.
No.
It's because we are a part of the niche.
Yes, of course. No, I'm not complaining that, oh my god,
oh, I'm just explaining.
But I'm saying that
I think
the particular aspect, Macross is becoming too expensive, is kind of too general a question. What are there parts of Macross that are becoming too expensive? For a lot of the foreign fans who posed this question to begin with, Macross is generally the toys. Because, like it or not, most people are probably downloading the rules of the anime themselves, so they're not paying too much for that. They're not going to the events, so they're not joining the fan clubs and getting tickets and stuff.
Right.
So how do they support it? Well, they support it by buying the Valkyries, and those are getting rarer and less in number and more expensive as a result. So yeah, in a way it is. I have always liked toys and stuff, so when I see their price going up, then I think there, you know, I have a limit of how much I can spend. It's just, it's not that I love the thing less, it's, or that I'm complaining about it. It's just, well, the situation is such that, no, I can't afford the YF-19.
That, I'm in the exact same boat.
Yeah. So it looks very nice and everything. You can make it as nice as you like. I just don't have that money to, especially not now that I have to buy another, well, you know, Adrian probably can fix my sound booster for me. I dropped it yesterday morning on the floor and smashed it into a million pieces. But now, you know, that was a limited item thing. If it was 1994 and Bandai had cared about Macro 7, maybe we could have stepped into Sakuraya and bought a million off the shelf. But no, they made maybe like a couple of thousand, maybe a couple of hundred, and yeah, it's a minor niche thing. I just broke one. So that's that.
And while this may not be the best indicator as well, I mean, things are being, as we mentioned with the upcoming movie Blu-ray box set, it looks like there's a limited number of them being made in a limited window. With all these new Macross reissues on Blu-ray, they've nearly all come with a sticker on the plastic sleeve saying that this is a limited manufacture. It's only going to be manufactured for 1 year.
Yeah.
And granted, that's probably more than enough than they need to flood the channel. But, and again, this isn't the best indicator of price, I realize that, but the last time I checked on Amazon, a brand new copy of the Super Duper edition of Do You Remember Love, for those who didn't buy it when it came out, is now going via a secondhand seller for $300, which is more than twice what it's worth.
Yeah.
Granted, you can buy them from secondhand sellers for $100. But prices, if you buy it new for Blu-rays, are cheaper than buying the original series, whether it be on Laserdisc or DVD on VHS. But because there's now this niche, this limited market, you've got to get them now because
you've got
things
to pre-order.
Don't. Well, whether with Valks you have to pre-order, yeah. But things don't get cheaper anymore for many of these things. There are exceptions. Recently, there was the Frontier TV box set with no English subtitles. Since that got announced and then released, the individual volumes have all dropped brand new to 2,000 yen or
under,
which hurts my wallet. But
But it's funny that
there are some cases with that, but as a general rule, these things sell out. They're made for a niche, not for an international market. As you said, you can't go in and buy them at Walmart. Even if Japan had Walmarts, we wouldn't be able to buy them there here, because that's not the type of product season.
Exactly right. No, well, that's what I'm saying about with the toys as well. You know, you can't. You could at one point go to an electronics store and find them on the shelf. You can't anymore. Right, Yodobashi Camera, they're not there
anymore.
I remember stacks of Aquarions in Yodobashi Camera. This is 2005. Yeah. Stacks of Koenig Monsters, which at the time was the most niche design ever.
All the VF22s.
Are you talking about the Yamato?
The Yamato Koenig Monster.
Yeah.
The Yamato Koenig Monster was like, it made no sense to me. Even though every year, after every Yamato purchase, I got the questionnaire and I filled it in, and they said, which one would you like us to make next? And I said, Koenig Monster. Every single thing that I bought, Koenig Monster, number one, please make it. And they announced it, and I was like, wait, no. Never in a million years would they make this random design from a game that nobody played.
Why and did it you came not out. Write VF2?
Because nobody wants that. And it was insane. I went to Yodobashi Camera. The price was 16,000, and you know what? It was really expensive, but I didn't care, because I felt that I had not, like, earned it, but I had created it. You know, I was responsible. Part of
the responsibility.
But there was a stack.
You gave birth to this
in Yodobashi Camera. A big, big stack. And these cases are huge. Those boxes are enormous. Huge stack. I took my both hands, you know, to the cashier, and I paid my money. And I haven't regretted it. People call that toy a piece of crap. But no, it was it was good for the time, I think. And now you couldn't make that toy now, I think. I know that Bandai released one because of, you know, Frontier.
They released two versions.
But they didn't. There is two versions, right? One with the special extra stuff, right? But you couldn't make that toy based off VFX2 now.
No, they released that toy based on the popularity of Frontier.
Exactly, right. So Bandai's been doing that a lot.
Yet they're releasing an Ozma color based on a pack-in game.
From a game that's out now, though, that you can go into a store and buy.
They're releasing a YF30. Which,
yeah, they are, with that
boy from a mind. Game that you can buy now.
Right.
So. Which has sold just under 100,000 copies. So,
okay, no, but I'm saying if Arcadia were to make a version of some other thing from VFX2, I don't know, whatever. What's really rare? Like, well, okay, that thing, that Neo Glaug, Variable Glaug from Macross, the Dreamcast game,
M3.
That would not be 16,000 yen. That'd be like two or three times the price. And smaller.
Well, you better start filling in those questionnaires.
They don't do them anymore.
How much the Regalt cost had they built?
That was a kit, right? And it was like 50,000 yen?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the market is shrinking. I said it would shrink, and it did, and it is, and it's continuing to shrink. Right. So, that is a worrying point of contention for a lot of people outside of Japan, because that's really the only thing that they can consume.
Right. I think that's
the crux of it.
Those barriers to entry as a consumer are the largest part of the problem, because as we said, for Frontier fans, younger fans, there's like, you know, books, magazines. Oh, books, magazines, trading cards, cans of tea, art cards, banners, Ranker
juice. You just offered me a can of Ranker juice, right?
There's just so
freshly
much.
Squeezed, open Ranker.
Okay? There is more merchandise for Frontier and for Macross in general, across all spectrums now, than there ever has been at any point in the past. But if we focus down the toys, that's where we get really, really niche.
Yeah.
You know. So I think the problem is the method by which foreign fans are supporting the franchise, and I applaud them for doing so and hope they continue to do so within their budgets. Their options are limited. Is what we're saying.
Is Macross becoming too expensive? It really relates to what kind of a consumer you are.
And where you are.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think we killed it.
We killed it.
Is Macross becoming too expensive? And you brought up the Wham Wave.
Club Tropicana drinks are free.
Alright. You earlier brought up the SDF-1 Wave 1/5000 scale. And you said that was too much.
I judged that it was too much when it first came out.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was originally released, Ichiman Yonsen and Hapyaka.
Okay.
And that's when that got released in...
One for every unit of scale.
2007, January 2007, that was a retail price, and that was too much for you.
That was
7 years prior to that, if you wanted an SDF-1 movie version at 1/4,000 scale, it would have cost you, as a kit, Ichiman Kyusen Hapyakun.
Yeah.
Translate these prices for people, please.
All right. You're looking at about $200.
As opposed to?
As opposed to $150 at a different scale, what transformable. If you wanted to have the other kit, which is the Fortress, it would cost you $200.
So one's a kit and one's a toy.
Yeah, one's a kit. That's unbuilt. You have to put it together. You have to paint it. You have to have some type of skill to get.
I know, but I was never.
Just play it in one mode.
Okay, but that was never in my my range. Not even just considering prices.
When this came out,
it was a kid.
It came out in 2000. So when it came out, you sit there and go, "Oh, I want that, but I don't have the skill to build it. I don't have the time to build it. I don't have all these things to build it."
Yeah.
And then when a company comes around and says, here, it's at a different scale, it's pretty much, and I'm probably guessing it's the exact same mold of the kit, just lent to a different company. They actually invested in a transformation gimmick. They put it out, painted, and then people either say, it's either too small, or that's too expensive. But 7 years before that, you had to have all the skill and time to do it, and you can only put it in one mode.
And more money.
Right.
And it's resin. It's even more fragile because if it drops, you're screwed.
Yeah, but I think you're comparing apples and oranges. You can't really compare a garage kit.
But that's the evolution of the toy, is the garage kit. Because
But it doesn't correlate to the consumer, because the consumer for a toy is going to be different.
Well, it's the technology that caught up with the crafting of a garage kit.
Okay.
Because you had the old 155 Valkyrie, and there wasn't garage kits back then that competed against it that would look better. There was no kit.
It wasn't.
That toy.
Yeah.
And then people decided to make kits on their own.
Okay. Why don't you compare it to the old Takatoku 1/3,000 scale SDF Wonder? Because that was cheaper. That was a toy, and that was transformable, and it was plastic, and it was available in stores, and it was cheaper.
Yeah, it was even exported.
By
Matchbox, and sold as Robotech toy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
it was cheaper.
But
it has
that's
a nostalgic value where now people are paying like $800
for
it.
Wait, no. But we're not talking about that.
I mean, you could ask my... Okay, for that
toy,
at that
time... At the time,
right?
We paid that much, and
no,
this
we
time...
No, we didn't. My father paid for it the year... Okay, we didn't pay for that. My father paid for that, and that was the only Christmas present I got that year, because he... Basically, he was... You know, they're doing layoffs and all that kind of stuff, so that was the only toy I got that year.
Didn't I meet you...
So, wonder what he thought, how much it cost.
Didn't I meet you in Mandarake in Shibuya one day just by coincidence, and we saw 1/3,000 scale SDF-1 in the shop there behind the glass, and it was relatively cheap. It was the cheapest I've ever seen one. It was like 15,000. And you and whoever you were with at the time, you said, buy it. And I said, well, no, because I still think that for a toy, over 10,000 is too expensive. So I didn't buy it, and a part of me does regret it, but at the same time, you know, you do have certain boundaries.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you... I mean, you can throw in any... There is the history of the garage kit or whatever. It doesn't really affect that much. So.
But the kits are what are being turned into toys now.
Yeah, okay.
And people are saying,
I understand that,
this price is outrageous. That's like, but if you wanted it,
yeah,
before.
But the reason, yeah, but the point is that within Japan, the niche market is now made up of a lot of people who in the 90s made a lot of garage kits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas the foreign fans are not necessarily that kind of consumer. Anyway.
I mean, should we even bring up the point that, I mean, I think the discussion here is around price of what people want as opposed to their other options. Because otherwise we could say that, well, if people complain about prices, why don't they just go and start collecting model kits instead?
Yeah.
Because...
Which
model kits have also increased exponentially in price. And for an average, if you get the model kit and all the paint, and if it's sold separately, any, you know, fast packs or super packs or whatever...
That new VF1...
And the paints and whatnot, you're paying about half of what you'd pay for an Arcadia Valk, on, you know, just as a rule of thumb.
Yeah.
It's a cheaper alternative.
Well, the same thing as what you would pay for a Yamato Valk back in the day.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are options there, but I don't think the discussion's about options more than people want this, they've always wanted this... And now it's from where they're at, what they want, it's more expensive.
Yeah.
All right, we didn't kill it, so.
Well, it's dead now.
All right, so finally, that is that. That was, wow, that was one long podcast.
Yeah, that second feels like forever since we said goodbye for the first half.
And as always, as those of you who listened to the first half, I hope you joined us for the second half. Renato's...
What's this? Look. Oh, shit, guys. We just got a C&D.
And
we've got to cut this podcast short.
Oh,
and,
God.
It says we have to remove all former podcasts off of iTunes and anywhere else. And...
Well, we really shouldn't have talked about Chia. So Renato's Super Dimensionables corner is something we'd like to have going again on a more regular basis. We're going to be combing the forums for any good topics. We are also now on YouTube, which is updated sporadically, but there will be a lot more content going up on that as we go on.
You should really wear the shoulder pads on YouTube and dance around to a Tia tune.
On that note,
Animania.
Let's make a Nendroid of Cheer. We'll call it a Cheer Pet. Okay. So on that note, this is Macro Speaker Podcast. Folding out.